concern the alat moros, and as far as the tender twigs are concerned, omer bor pri adam, if he feels like eating any of them, then he says bor pri adam. The al avyonos vel kafrisen, but when it comes to the avyonos, that is to the berries itself, the al kafrisen, which they usually translate as the buds of this particular plant, so omer bor pri haves, he says bor pri haves. So obviously there's a contradiction, because one statement said what? That you make it only, say, Bori Priya waits only for the avionos, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this one says that you make it also for the kafrisa.
For the buds,
okay?
And the...
Right. All right, so he says, Hud Omar Karabi Akiva. So we say this latter opinion is really in accordance with the opinion given by Rabbi Akiva, the Tanan, where we learned, and this happens to be a Mishnah in Maestras, that Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Rabbi Eliezer says that sloth, when it comes to the caperberry, misaser, then you have to give a tithe of what? Tomorrow's, the avionos, the caprisen, right? You have to give both from the twigs and also from the berries and also from the blossoms. You have to tithe any one of them. In other words, let's say you want to eat them and you have 10 of them, what do you have to do? You have to set aside one as miser, okay? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva Omer, but Rabbi Akiva says, "Ein misaser el avyonos bilvad." Right? He says only the berries are to be tied; the others are not tied. Why? Mipnei shukri, because the berries is fruit. Therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, the tomorrows, in other words, the tender twigs or the blossom, the kaprisen, right? The kaprisen, the blossoms. He says these are not fruits. Which would mean what? Which would mean that the one who says that you should say Bori Pri Haveitz over this is
wrong.
Rabbi Akiva would say, no, that's not right, okay? Now look, I mean, you say wrong and right. I mean, I don't have to tell you that, you know, different authorities can have different opinions, okay? The question is only, we don't say that because Rabbi Akiva says this, and let's say Rabbi Eliezer says something else, that therefore Rabbi Eliezer is necessarily wrong. But the question then becomes, whose opinion are we going to follow as the decisive law is concerned, as the halacha? Mm-hmm. Of course, in this particular case, the law is going to follow, I can tell you right now, Rabbi Akiva. It will follow him. In other words, only the berries then will be subject to Maaser. But they're now analyzing this. And the analysis is based upon the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Okay, the name one. So they say, all right, let's say Halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. Let's say the Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. Gans by. So what is the objection to that? He says, Yoma Halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. If we stated definitely that the Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva, notice the statement was not said, but let's say that we would say, okay, Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. So what is the objection to saying that the Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva? So he says, if we had said that the Halacha follows Rabbi Akiva, then Hava Amina would have said, Afilu Ba'oretz, that even in Eretz Yisrael, the Halacha has to follow him. Kamash Malon. So therefore, I have learned instead that what? The very fact that it doesn't say that is to show us that Kol HaMekel Ba'aretz, whoever has the more lenient opinion in Eretz Yisrael, Halacha K'moshe B'chutz La'aretz. Then, when it comes to outside of Eretz Yisrael, there's no question that we follow the lenient opinion of the person in Eretz Yisrael. Avol Ba'aretz, but in Eretz Yisrael itself, lo, we would not. In other words, in Eretz Yisrael, we have to be more machmir, as we would say. We have to be
more strict.
More strict in our interpretation. So, Rabbi Eliezer says that in addition to the berries, there's something else that has to be miser. And they say, in Eretz Yisrael, we have to follow his opinion and not Rabbi Akiva's. Okay? We understand. No, I mean, how the Gemara is reasoning this. Okay. So now it says, B'nei Mor. Now let's say as follows. Halacha k'Rabbi Akiva b'chutzel la'oretz. Maybe we should say specifically then what? That the halacha follows Rabbi Akiva when it is in, outside of Eretz Israel, right? When you're in the diaspora. The Kol HaMekel b'oretz, because as we've said before, a little principle that whoever has the lenient point of view in Eretz Israel, halacha k'moise b'chutzel la'oretz, then the halacha follows him when it is in diaspora. So he says, Iyomar Hochi, if he had said so, then Habamina would say, Hochinami, okay, or Hanimili. Over here it's probably Hanimili, okay? Hanimili, when, what situation are we talking about? It says, Gabe Maser Ilam. In other words, maybe we're talking about only tithing what comes from the tree, in other words, the fruit of the tree. Now, what did we say before? I said a few minutes ago that the idea of miser, that you have to give in Eretz Yisrael, what does the Torah say? It says, the goncho teroshcha v'yitzarecha, right? Your grain, your wine, your oil. But what doesn't it say? It doesn't say the fruit of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he says, we might have said that Gabi miser Elon, concerning, you know, giving miser from the fruit of trees, the Be'oretz, where in Eretz Israel itself, Gufo Midrabbanan, this is only an enactment of the rabbis, in other words, it is not Midrash, as we say, right? So, in that case, we'd say, all right, guns fine, so we should follow the opinion of the Mekel, we should follow the opinion of the one who is lenient. Avol Gabe Orlo. However, when it comes to Orlo, we have a different situation. Why? Diba Oretz in Eretz Yisrael, right? What about the fruit of trees in Eretz Yisrael? The answer is Midrash, the Torah itself commands us that we have to observe the laws of Orlo. You know, that the first 3 years we're not allowed to eat it, the fourth year it's questionable. I mean, it wasn't questionable back in the days of the temple, but today it's questionable. What are we doing? Okay? So, Midaraisa, Torah itself commanded that. So, Eimah, the Chutzlar, it's an exot. So, let us say then that in Eretz Yisrael, let me also make an enactment to say that we have to be just as strict with the laws of Orla outside of Eretz Yisrael as we are within Eretz Yisrael, right? So, Kamash Malon. Therefore, we learn that this is not necessarily so. As we're going to see, there is a difference in the application of the laws of Orla as pertaining to Chutz La'aretz. Okay? All right. So now they bring another case. Ravina Ashkechei Lema Barav Rashi. Ravina happened to come across Ma Barav Rashi, the Kozorek Avionos, Mekaochel Kapris. He took the berries of the caperberry tree, right? And what did he do? He threw them away. Why did he throw them away? Because in being Orla, he could not eat it. Okay? Even though, now where were they? Where were these gentlemen, the Maravashi and Rabino? The answer is they were in Babylonia, which is Chutz La'aretz. Okay? So here is a case of what happened in Chutz La'aretz. Happened in Babylonia in this case. All right? We see that Rabino found Maravashi. And what did he see him? What did he observe him doing? He saw that he threw away the berries because of caprisum. But what did he eat? He ate the blossoms, as we say. Which, remember, as I said, they were considered a delicacy. So Omalei, so he said unto him, my datcho, tell me, what opinion are you following? Is it Rabbi Akiva? Are you following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva the Mekel? You know, who said that only what is subject to war law?
Only the fruit.
Only the right fruit, okay? Maybe Vila Avid Markeve Shammai, the Mikhailit Bay. Maybe you should follow the opinion of the Shammai, who are even more makel in this Inyan. Did none, as we've learned, this happens to be a Tesefta and Kalayim. It says over there, it's Lop when it comes to the caperberry bush. They shama yoimrim, they say kilayim bekeren. Uveisilal oimrim ain kilayim bekeren. Alright, so the question is, if there should be such a bush, and it happens to be in a vineyard, now we know that there is a law of kilayim. What is the law of kilayim? not allowed to plant, you know, two types of fruits
in
together.
The same area.
Right, in the same area, exactly. So, according to Beis Shammai, if you happen to have a caper berry growing within a vineyard, they say that this is not kilayim. Okay? Excuse me, they say that it is kilayim. Mm-hmm. They say it is kilayim, okay? Now, if they say it is kilayim, then it means that, in their opinion, this is not a tree. Because a tree is forbidden. You understand? This is the difference. What is prohibited growing in the vineyard? Let's say if you plant vegetables, this would be kilayim bekarim, okay? So, therefore...
Why is this different then?
Why? It's a good question, but the point is that a tree and another tree, after all, the grapevine is also like a tree, okay? So what do we say for the grapes? We say verbia way, something. So it falls in the same category. So in other words, to have a tree here, to have a tree here, this is not considered kilayim. But if you would have, you know, vegetables, as we say, growing in the
orchard.
In the, yeah, it's not an orchard in this case, in the vineyard, okay? And this represents prohibited kilayim. So, Beis Shammai's opinion is that it is kilayim, all right? Which would mean what? Which would mean ergo, right? Ergo, we would say that the caper berry is not a tree, but it is.
It's a bush.
It's a bush. It's like a vegetable in this particular case, okay? Now, if it is like a vegetable, then what if a person, he's not talking now about orla, but what if a person wants to eat from it under normal circumstances?
That make for a priyadoma.
It's for a priyadoma, right? It's no longer considered a fruit. Okay. It's for a priyadoma. It's not a fruit of a tree now. Okay. So that's the opinion of Beis Shammai. However, what is Beis Hillel say? No. Okay, and then of course, you have kilayim keren. Basically, the lomrim, basically, let's say, ain't kilayim keren. They say, no, it ain't. It's not kilayim. Which means then that in accordance with Beis Hillel, it is like a tree, right? But therefore, it is not liable to the law of kilayim if it happens to be in the vineyard. And Eilav Eilav Modim. However, all of them are in agreement, what? That nevertheless, Shechayav the Orla, even Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, no matter which opinion, but they would say that nevertheless, this bush, this caperberry bush, is still subject to the laws of Orla. So they say, oh, go for Kasha. Hey, this is in itself, it's a big problem. It's a contradiction. Why? Because Amrit's law. You said a moment ago that in the case of the caperberry, Beis Shammai Yomrim, Kilayim Bakerem, right? That they say that it is Kilayim if it grows in a vineyard. So Almor, from this we see Min Yerako, that it is considered like a vegetable. The Hodor Toni, and then you learned Eilav Eilav Modim Shechayav Orla, that they're all in agreement that it is liable for Orla. Now I have to point out, Orla applies only to what? To trees. Does it apply to vegetables?
No.
No. So therefore, according to opinion A, consider it like a tree. Opinion B says, hey, it's not a tree. It's like a vegetable. So Alma, we see what? From the fact that they are all in agreement, in other words, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are both in agreement that it is liable to the laws of Orla. So in that case, then, what do we have to say? We have to say, hey, this bush is min ilanhu. It's a species of tree. So they're contradicting each other. So he says, holo kasha. Nah, it's not such a contradiction. Why? Beis Shammai sepuke misapkelehu. Says Beis Shammai, they were really in doubt. They weren't 100% sure whether they should consider it
a tree,
right? Or should they consider it a vegetable? Correct. So therefore, v'yad de'hoch lechumra, therefore they took the most severe point of view, they were the strictest point of view in both cases. If it is a tree, right? Then in that case, what? It's subject to war law. And if it's like a vegetable, then in that case, then we have to say that it's called kilayim bekerem. Obviously, what do you have to do if you have a case of kilayim? Got to uproot the thing which is no good.
Yeah, right.
Right, exactly. You have to uproot it, okay?
Destroy it.
Right. Yeah, it has to be destroyed. There's a Mishnah at the beginning of Shkolim, which says that on the first day of Adar, the Echad Adar, Samach Rizim, they have to make a public proclamation in all the shuls about two things. One of them is Shkolim, in other words, this is the time when you have to give your annual Matzis HaShekel. And the other thing is Kilayim, you have to get rid of them. Because by this time, in other words, by the beginning of the month of Adar, you can already see
sprouting
in the garden, and you can already determine that this is going to be this and it's going to be that. Whereas, I mean, you know, earlier than that, what do you know what's growing? Understand? But at this point, it becomes visible. All right. So, in other words, then they would have to take the strict view if it is a vegetable and say, yank it.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, but
they were in doubt, so they took the strictest point of view in both cases. Bekol moka, however, in any case, v'dei shamai avilei sfeik orlo. All right, so now we say, all right, so what do we see? So we see that as far as v'dei shamai is concerned, right, even though they took the strictest point of view, but nevertheless, they still are in doubt concerning what? Whether this is really subject to the laws of orlo. In other words, is it a, if it's a, you know, if it's a vegetable, as we said, then certainly it's not subject to the laws of orlo.
But the fact that it's growing with the individual.
Right. So now the question is, nu, what, so what? So the answer is, none, and we have learned, and this happens to be a Mishnah in orlo, but as a matter of fact, we had it also in Kiddushin a couple of years ago.
If we can research that far back.
Okay. Because so they quoted it at that time. And that is what? Safek or lo be'eretz Yisrael Otzer. If you have any doubt whatever as to whether this particular fruit is orlo, then if it is in Eretz Yisrael, in other words, if the fruit itself grows in Eretz Yisrael, right? And in that particular case, there's no question that it is orlo. You have to consider it, even if you're doubtful, but you have to take the stricter point of view and consider it as orlo. Uvisuria, what about if it is in Syria? Now, in Syria, now what is the difference between Syria and Eretz Yisrael? Of course, the answer is that at a certain point, there were parts of what is today Syria that were actually conquered by King David, for example, by subsequently in the time of the Hasmoneans also. And not only that, if you take a look in the Torah, you see that there are two different interpretations as to what Eretz Yisrael is. What are the boundaries? You have an ideal expanded Eretz Yisrael boundary, which goes as far as what? As far as Nahar Paras, as far as the Euphrates River, okay? And needless to say, to the north, it doesn't stop where the Lebanese border is today, but it went a little further north.
Iraq, they would take it all the way into Iraq. But what's Iraq?
Almost, yeah, yeah. So that's one statement concerning what the ideal borders of Eretz Israel should be. But then there's the more practical one, which we find when it came, you know, towards the end of the 40th year, wandering in the desert, and you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was already concerned how the land was to be apportioned. And so if you take a look in the last Sedra of Sefer Bamidbar, okay?
do. Absolutely Masi, okay? Matos Amasi, all right? Take a look at Matos Amasi. So you find that over there, they describe, and these are the boundaries of Eretz Israel. And they start, you know, and they go from the north, the, you know, they start from the south, they go up to the north, and then out to the east, and so on and so forth. Now, what do we find over there is the eastern border of Eretz Israel. The eastern border. What do we find?
Would be the Euphrates River.
No.
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 Sorry, went as far as the Euphrates.
Not as far as all.
There's some over on the other side of Jordan. There's a couple of tribes on the other side.
I was just thinking about reading all right. The Yamamela, but I'm not.
Just north of the Yamamela. I mean, what empties into the Yamamela?
Jordan River.
The Jordan River. The Yarden. Okay? Starts up from the mountains in the north and follows then, you know, it says the shore of Yom Kinneret, right? And then it continues down the Yarden until it winds up into the Yam HaMelech. Okay, take a look and you see. Now, therefore, what is the implication over there? There, the implication is that that Eretz Israel, as to be divided among the tribes, originally ended where? At the Jordan River. However, because 2.5 tribes said
they
needed more land, a beautiful pasture on the other side of the river, etc., etc., right? So eventually they were given permission to go and to settle in Eber HaYarden, as we'd say. In other words, the other side of the Jordan River. Okay?
They would help conquer the land.
Right. They had to make a commitment that first they would fight to conquer the land. Okay. So then Eretz Israel was expanded, okay, into that territory. All right. Now, Syria, as I said, was, you know, it would have been part of the ideal boundary of Eretz Israel as far as Nahar Pharos is concerned. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the fact is that at one time or another, actually, it did belong to the Jewish people. Didn't always stay for the Jewish people, but there was some conquest. So that, therefore, Syria was considered a separate area. It had some of the dinim of Eretz Israel, as far as fruit is concerned, you understand? As far as some of these things are concerned. But the law was not as strict, right, it was not as strict there as it would be in Eretz Israel itself. Okay, yet it was not considered chutz la'aretz. It was not considered chutz la'aretz.
But yet they used the
lenient. In other words, it's an intermediate state. David? The eastern shore.
Right.
Of the Kinneret, okay? Right. And then?
Right.
In other words, where does it wind up? It winds up in the Yam HaMelech. Okay, so that's all. Correct. Okay, so this is what I'm saying. Okay? So that contradicts, to a certain extent, if you wish, the idealized, you know, the expanded Eretz Israel that was promised Avraham Avinu. You understand?
Okay, but I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so this is what always has bothered me.
Yeah.
Sure, people wiser than I am. Fine, good. So we go to the Kinneret, Yarden, Yamnelah.
Yes, right.
But the tribes of Reuven and Gad and Menashe come along and say, guess what, you know?
Yeah, we need
we're
that land over there.
Here.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, Hashem doesn't say, oh no, you can't stay here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he gets angry and says, no, you have to go and fight, and then you can come back. It doesn't say, no, it's not sure to have a chazah.
But actually, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them? He said that if you make a commitment to fight, then this land which has been conquered will be yours.
Right.
But
right.
If not, then you're going to have to settle for land
on the other side
west of the Jordan River. In other words,
correct.
Okay?
But that's not the same as saying these were your boundaries and you must stay within them.
Yeah. Correct.
I mean, what they were saying is, what, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
right.
We all fought.
We need space.
Conquer
right.
this
yeah.
part, you're going
right.
to settle
yeah.
here, and everybody, all your brothers are going to go to war on
mm-hmm.
the other side.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Day. You're going to sit here with your sheep.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not going to be so. All
right.
Right. That's
all right.
Yeah,
okay. All right, now all this is simply, as we see, you know, that what is the status of Syria, all right? So we see that Syria occupies an intermediate position as far as some of these laws concerning Misa, Trumas, etc., etc.
But
okay?
It's still considered part of...
In other words, to a certain extent, they have still observed some of the laws of Eretz Israel. Okay, yeah.
I don't want to let this go. What is your explanation,
yeah.
having just read where the border is,
right.
for the fact that B'nai Israel was permitted to occupy and settle what really is now what we would call Transjordan?
Correct, yeah. No, the answer is that they fulfilled their part of the bargain, and therefore they were permitted to settle over there. That's all. I mean, they fulfilled it.
But that land was conquered by the
tribes.
Of course,
it had first been conquered by the people of Israel. Okay? It's the land of Sichon and Og. Okay? This is the land that had been conquered,
right.
and therefore that was assigned
like
to these tribes.
Right,
exactly. Okay.
Without their precedent, we wouldn't be allowed to live here. Otherwise, we'd have to live on the other side of the Yarden.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said, without their precedent, we would have to be obliged to live in the other side of the Yarden. So
yeah, correct.
So they've set a precedent right now. We can live outside Israel.
But it wasn't considered outside Israel. That's the point.
The fact of the matter is, okay,
Jewish nation
from a political point of view, of course, I don't have to tell you.
Wars in Israel.
Okay. Historically, and I don't want to belabor the point, okay? In the days of the Bayit Sheni, in the days of the Second Temple, Jews still continued to live in all kinds of settlements on the other side of the Jordan River, and that was still considered part of Eretz Israel, okay? Was considered. For purposes, as I said, of various dinim, you had different divisions. You had Eretz Israel. You had Eber HaYarden, okay, and then you had the Galil, which also to a certain extent was considered, you know, a separate territory within Eretz Israel, okay? And then beyond that, of course, you had Syria and Chutz La'aretz, okay? This is the way they figured. Now, all these, from different halachic points of view, at times it's important, you know, to know the difference between one and the other. Okay.
In the embassy garden outside, in the Swiss embassy, if they've got a garden there. In the Israeli embassy in Switzerland, for instance, if they have a garden there, is that Chutz La'aretz or is that... That's a joke.
That's a good question. However, I would have to
repeat
it
don't worry.
Not being, even though it belongs to Israel, but still
it's not in Israel. Israel.
All right. Alright, so anyway.
So we go, though.
Utnan, the last line then, again, Safek or law, where it is a question of doubtful or law. Of course, if it's definite or law, there's no question.
Yeah, it's just right.
You're not allowed to eat it, okay. But Safek or law, we're not certain exactly what it is, okay? It might possibly be. Or, okay? Then in that case, Beretz Israel, also. If you're in Israel itself, you're not permitted to eat that food.
Right.
Uvis Surya, if you're in Syria, then mutar, you are permitted to eat that fruit. Okay? Uve chutz la'aretz. And what if you're outside Eretz Israel? And now here, what are we talking about? We're talking about, first of all, Rashi says, take a look at the last Rashi's over there. It says uve chutz la'aretz, you see?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he says, "V'chutz la'aretz halokeach b'nechoshet al ha'olam." Okay. If a person comes to buy fruit from someone who is suspected that he's not careful when it comes to orlam, v'yodeahu sheyesh b'fardeso sekenis u'nedios, and he knows that in the orchards belonging to this person whom he suspects, you're going to have older trees and also younger trees. then what is the din in that particular case? So the din is, yored. First I'll read the text on, he goes down below Keah. Now, who can go down and take whatever it may be? The answer is, as Rashi says, Yorei Volokei Achemenu. He can go and take from it, Apal Pisha Sopei Kum Yobim Anatiyos. Even though it is doubtful whether actually it is from the newer plants rather than the older plants. Okay? Or Vilvad Shelo Yiren Elokei. As long as he doesn't see where the person who is suspected, not being very observant of Ola, as long as he doesn't watch to see exactly which plant the guy took from. In other words, if the guy goes, all right, Chaim has a fruit stand over here, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. And you go to the fruit stand and you say, okay, I want to get some apples. Okay. So, you know that Chaim has in his backyard, in his orchard over there, he has older trees and younger trees. As long as you don't know whether Chaim is taking his apples from the older trees or from the younger trees, it is permissible to you. Why? Because you're in Chutz La'aretz. And in Chutz La'aretz, the law is not as strict in its application as it would be in Eretz Yisrael itself. So this is the din. This is why we are permitted to buy all kinds of fruit. Because do we see? We don't know what it is. And as long as we don't know what it is, then this law gives us permission in Chutz La'aretz to buy any kind of fruit.
You're buying it from a Jewish farmer, then the burden should be on him.
Yeah, okay, fine. I agree with you. But what if he's not so observant?
No.
But the point is, you're still permitted to buy even from someone who is not observant, as long as you yourself aren't going there to the trees and you don't observe what he's doing.
The strict rule says, I know, it's usually applied that the burden is, like we have mosquitoes,
Right.
And so forth. And they make matzah that the wheat and everything is strictly controlled and handled by the
pot. Right.
So they don't put the burden on the people, they put the burden on those who sell it.
Of course, I'm giving you a general rule. I don't have to tell you that in certain circumstances it doesn't work that way. Okay. But the general rule as we apply over here is the fact that if you buy fruits, vegetables at a vegetable stand or in the market or something like that, you don't have to worry about whether it's Orlo or not. Vegetables wouldn't apply anyways, I said. Of course, remember, Orlo applies only to fruit growing on trees. Okay.
Is that observed in Israel?
Yeah.
It is observed.
You have a lot of observant people living in Eretz Yisrael, and if you take a look very often at fruit, in whatever form it may be, it could be fruit as is, or maybe fruit, let's say, which has been processed into something else, and so on, you'll take a look at the can, and you'll see that if it comes from anyone with a reliable hechsher, they'll always tell you that it is noki, it is absolutely free from chashash, any suspicion, whatever, of being hevel, orlo, etc., etc. In other words, it's free from any suspicion that this fruit would be, because it means that the mashgichim over there were very careful.
Reliable.
And they're very careful to make sure that the fruit was older fruit already and not subject to any of these laws. David?
I'm sorry, so how about chaos means then I can't make up the missing show?
Where?
1, 2, 3, 4, the futsal aris.
Yeah.
How about chaos means
choshud. Choshud means somebody who is suspected.
It's
under suspicion.
Oh,
hashad means suspect. Suspicion, right? So choshud is somebody who's under suspicion. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Alright, now to continue. Now, Rabbi Akiva, Bimikom, Rabbi Eliezer, Abdin and Kavosei. So they say as follows. Okay. When Rabbi Akiva, right? And Rabbi Eliezer, they happen to be contemporaries, and both of them are living in Eretz Yisrael. So in this case, if it's a question between deciding according to Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Eliezer, the answer is Adin and Kavosei. we have to follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Okay? And remember, we said before that Rabbi Akiva was more makel. He was more lenient in regards to this fruit, right? He said only the fruit, but not the rest of the leaves, the buds, etc. didn't apply. Okay? And how about Beis Shammai b'mkom Beis Hillel? They say, Eino Mishnah, hey. And when it comes to a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, he says, Eino Mishnah. The Mishnah is not in accordance with whom? With Beis Shammai. The Mishnah always follows Beis Hillel. All right. Now they go into another area, and I'll learn for a few more minutes. Okay. And this area is as follows. The Sipukle said, maybe we could learn it from a different angle. The Nasa Shemalapri says, you know what the buds are doing? The buds are there in order to preserve the fruit. So what is the din concerning that? Rahmana Omar, the Torah says, Varalten or Loso Espirio, that when you declare this fruit uncircumcised literally, in other words, you're not allowed to eat from the fruit, right? Or Loso, it is its uncircumcised position. Espirio, with its fruit, because you know the word es in Hebrew sometimes has a translation and sometimes it has no translation. Now when the word es is translated, then in that case it means with. Okay, so that being the case, then what does it mean es pirio together with its fruit? So he says es hatofil lepirio. It means that which is secondary to the fruit. Umay nihu, what is that? Shomelapri. The answer is, it's that thing which actually protects the fruit. In other words, in this case, the bud, or the twig, whatever it may be. Alright, so in other words, he's saying, okay, since we have a din about Shomelapri, so maybe we could have learned what? That we're not allowed to eat, or maybe what bracha we should make, or something like that, from the fact, you know, that the bud, like, let's say, is there to protect the fruit. So Omar Rava said, Heicham Rinan did not say Shem and the Free. He says, when do we say that this is a fact and that it makes a difference to us? Whether, you know, the fact that it is a Shem and the Free, the fact that it preserves the fruit. He says, Heicham de Isay. He says, this is a case where it remains Bein betolush, whether the fruit has been cut off, you know, from the tree, or Bein betchumor, whether the fruit is still attached to the tree. In other words, where even after you cut off the fruit from the tree, this protective, whatever it may be, is still there, and in that case, it's a factor to consider, you know, both as far as the bracha is concerned, the orlo, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Okay, but when it disappears, once you cut it off and it's not there anymore, then in that particular case, it's no longer a factor, and we don't say it is a shomer nefri. Okay. But hocha, in our case. In the case, again, coming back to what? The case of the good old caperberry bush. He says, did the chubar isay? Yeah. As long as it's still attached to its branches, then what? The bud is still there. But betolush, the minute you cut it off, leisay, it's no longer there. So you cannot call it what?
A
shamanapri. You cannot consider it as being a shamanapri.
What if it is a Shomer Lepri? Is that subject to the Shomer Lepri makes the fruit not subject to the laws?
No. Then it means that whatever laws apply to the fruit would also apply to this part as well.
Oh, okay. Would be also applied.
Correct.
Okay.
And this is what the next kasha that we see over here. Espe Abaye. So Abaye asked the following kasha. He says, look, we have a teaching that says, Pitmo Shel Rimon. Now, the pitum of the pomegranate. What is the pitum of the pomegranate? The answer is, you know, on a pomegranate, you have a thing that sticks out at the end, okay? You know, just like, for example, like when you have an esrog, you also have a pitum that sticks out.
Same.
Right, yeah. Except that it's not the part which is attached to the tree. That's called the orchids, okay?
Yeah.
But this is something that sticks out at the other end, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he says, yeah, pitmo shel rimon, he says, this pitum of the pomegranate, mitztorefes. It is if it's added to the same dinim that apply to the pomegranate itself. The hanet shelo ein mitztoref. However, the blossom of the pomegranate is not added to the pomegranate such. You understand what I'm saying? In other words,
that's why.
What law would apply to the pitum? The answer is whatever law applies to the pomegranate applies to the pitum. But the blossom of the pomegranate tree? No. That has nothing to do with it. So that if we would eat the blossom, it would not be the same as eating the pomegranate. You understand? And this is, you know, it's so that it makes it parallel to what? To the business about the caper berry. Right. Makes it a parallel. All right. Yeah, of course. No question about it. Right. But nevertheless, from a technical point of view, could the rimon exist without it or not? You understand? So if it cannot exist without it, then they have to say it's tarev. It's added. Whatever laws apply to one, apply to the other. Okay? Alright, inasmuch as you have said that its blossom cannot be considered as being an integral part of it, right? It's not added to it literally. So almo we see from this what? The lav ochelhu, right? That the blossom here is not considered food. The Tanya, we have learned Gabi Orlo, that in the connection with Orlo, Klipe Rimon, the Hanet Shelo, right? The shells, the peel of the pomegranate, as well as its blossom. Klipe Egozim, the shells of nuts, the Hakarinim, and the nut meat itself. Chayovim the Orlo, all of these things are liable to the laws of Orlo. So already we see another contradiction. Why? Because a moment ago
we said
that the hanets, in other words, the blossom, is not part of the pomegranate. And here it says that it is part of the pomegranate as far as orlo is concerned. It's also prohibited, you know, that you should eat it if it is orlo. So elo amar Rava. So rather, Rava said as follows: Heicha minon, where do we say dinasalahu shamina peirei? That it becomes a protection, right, for its fruit, the shomer, right, for the fruit, is eicho de isei v'shas gemar peirei. He says, this is the case where it is still there at the time when the fruit matures. Gemar, you know, in this particular case, literally finish, but what do we mean by finishing over here? It means that it becomes ripe, okay? When the fruit becomes ripe.
Alright, so
okay, well, the rimon is, that is the pitum of the rimon is still there at that point, right? But what about the blossom? Is the blossom there at this point?
No.
Or not? You see, this we don't know. Maybe in the pomegranate it is. That's why he said, anet is also, alright? Whereas in the case of what? In the case of the caperberry bush, right? High capres, but when you come to the bud of the caperberry bush, he says, lese bishas gemar peret. It's not there once the fruit ripens. Well, I think I'm going to stop at this particular point before I run out of steam.
Alright, so we're now on.
Yeah, so we're now on Lamed Bav, the second side, roughly one third of the way
Lamed
down.
Lamed Bav,
right. Lamed Bav. Right, Lamed Bav, yeah.